the purse of satisfaction he made at a stockyard bargain. If he was sure of anything in this pit, as he shed from his brow some vital essence that he could not name, it was of the pure inconsequence of his existence. If one pebble had tumbled from the back of another in the most obscure corner of the darkest valley in the back of the moon, it would matter as much as him to his fellow men. In his abjectness, he became a supernova of self-pity. Imagining himself posted in the sky like Orion, he was visible to broken-hearted mothers everywhere, in broad daylight. They would come out of their dugouts and soddies, these women of the Kansas plains, and point with their lye-scorched forefingers at the abandoned boy in the sky, prone and smashed, and forever beyond their arms to embrace. He wanted his mother now. He wanted her so much he shed tears that drained down those channels of moon dust, down those lonely, untracked lunar valleys, to the place where sadness collected, on this most doleful of worlds. He cried as he had not since he was first laid on his mother's glistening belly, a purple-faced infant. Like that babe, he could not utter the name of his beloved. The sky opened with a rusty squeak. From beyond, light from a linen wick shone, as brilliant to his frozen pupils as the gaze of the Almighty. Three figures stood above, looking at him by lamplight, squinting as if his form offended their eyes. This mute gaping went on for some minutes, until a fourth figure appeared, smaller, more slender than the others, shining with a certain warmness that suggested she wore no clothes. In his state of disassembly, this did not seem strange to him, nor was he surprised when she leapt into the pit in a single, pantherish bound. She was indeed naked, round limbs caressed by tendrils of light and gloom, loosed breasts casting shadows down to a maidenly, tapered waist. She was regarding him with eyes half-lidded, an appraising frown on her face. Cleaved in two, some part of his brain still perceived the girl's handsomeness. Her face was perfectly ovoid, with a high, unblemished forehead and brows plucked into neat, downy arches. Her hair was thick and shining like pistol metal in the lamplight, yet adorned with a girlish bow. The only flaw, the thin, tight mouth that seemed to ripple with tension, as when she had conversed with him at the table, eons before. Perceiving the girl's handsomeness, the man responded to it. Senses unspooling, dusty nostrils scraping the ground, his mouth found feminine toes mashed and tapered by years crammed in pointed boots. He could neither speak nor think, but by some convolution of mashed nerves, his sense of smell was heightened. He detected on those toes an odor he knew from the whorehouses of Dodge City, that particular combination of perfume and leather and sweat of women disrobed for pleasure. It made him want to form his lips into a gesture that should have been familiar to him, but whose name was gone now, stolen. Instead, when he placed his rounded mouth on her foot, he drooled blood and spit on her toes. "By the Lord, a pig even now," the girl declared, voice clear but fluttering in his ears, like a scream launched in the teeth of a prairie wind.
"Schnitt in," someone said from above. "Jetzt!"
Shaking her foot free, she disappeared behind him. Then the stone man felt himself rising, leaving his little nest of bodily humors. Stooping, she had hold of him now, grasping him by the strip of his undamaged pate. He moaned with the exertion of being so handled. And as she pulled him higher, he felt he might speak, might produce some kind of protest, until his attention was drawn to a sharp new insult to the left point of his jaw. They froze there together for a moment, her breath caressing his upturned forehead.